A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Coming up here in a matter of moments, we're going to be talking with Knox Williams, who is the president and executive director of the American Suppressor Association, one of nearly 40 groups that signed on to this letter. It came out late yesterday, a letter to House Speaker Mike Johnson, Senate Majority Leader John Thune, calling for the removal of suppressors from the National Firearms Act as part of this budget reconciliation bill. Now, you know, obviously we've been talking about this all week long. I had Representative Andrew Clyde on the program earlier this week. He called the language that emerged from the House Ways and Means Committee, which removed the $200 transfer tax, but kept the $200 maker tax intact, kept the fingerprinting and registration requirements under the NFA intact. He called that language a quarter win, right? A full win for Representative Clyde, I think, and quite honestly for many gun owners, would have been not only the inclusion of Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act, the removal of suppressors from the NFA, but also the removal of short barrel firearms from the NFA as well. Now, that language did not make it into the manager's amendment to the budget bill that was released late last night. And we do talk about that a little bit with Knox Williams. But I think, you know, for Andrew Clyde and for others, this would be considered a half win. Because it's not just getting rid of half of the taxes, right? Remember, there's the $200 transfer tax. There's also the $200 maker tax on suppressors and NFA items. So not only are both the transfer and the maker tax now removed under the language of the budget reconciliation bill, but suppressors themselves are removed from the NFA. So as Representative Clyde, you know, talked about earlier in the week, the registration requirement is actually a registration that you paid the tax. So if you don't need to pay the tax, well, then there's no reason for you to have to register your item under the NFA. And this is a big win, right? It may not be everything that gun owners were wanting and everything that gun owners were asking for. There is still the opportunity to further amend this language in favor of gun owners in the Second Amendment when the bill crosses over to the Senate. There's also the danger that this language that was included in the manager's amendment could be removed by the Senate. So the bill is still in flux, and it is still subject to change. But the language that was approved by the House early on Thursday morning, even if it's not everything that gun owners were hoping for and wanting, is still a significant victory. For the first time in decades, something is being removed from the National Firearms Act. And I know we'd all like to see the repeal of the NFA completely, but, you know, as again, we talk about with Knox Williams, these budget negotiations are fundamentally about the art of the possible. And based on the current makeup of Congress, I think full repeal of the NFA just is not possible with the members that are currently sitting on Capitol Hill. What is possible, however, is to make some major reforms to the NFA and to improve dramatically our access to these devices, which, yes, can help protect our hearing, but I think also help us be good neighbors as gun owners. So, well, with that out of the way, let's get right to the conversation with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association. Take a look and a listen to our conversation right now. Knox, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to talk with you this morning, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Cam.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, the vote was close, 215 to 214 in the House. But as of right now, this is very good news. The manager's amendment came out, I guess, late Wednesday night. Apologies for the rooster there in the background. Speaking of silencers, boy, I'd love to be able to suppress Mario the rooster right now, but he's out on the front porch. So, we'll just have to deal with that. But this manager's amendment comes out on Wednesday night. Shut up, Rooster. And the language, Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act, was included. This was something that obviously gun owners have been asking for, you know, obviously yourself. And we saw on Wednesday afternoon this letter from, what was it, about 40 different organizations coming together and asking Congress to include Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act in this budget reconciliation bill. Can you talk about how that letter came together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, first off, it's a great day to be an American. And I think that we owe a huge debt of gratitude to House leadership and to all the members that voted for President Trump's one big beautiful bill that he wants to get to his desk. The inclusion of Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act is something that we've been working on for over a decade as part of a major coalition, and that's really what came together with that letter. To be able to have groups like ASA, the American Suppressor Association, where we are, the NRA, Gun Owners of America, Second Amendment Foundation, DRGO, the Academy of Doctors of Audiology. I mean, just a wide swath of people that are interested because they know that suppressors are hearing protection devices and that they should not be subject to the NFA taxation and registration scheme that they've been under since 1934.
Absolutely. And as again, this language right now, as introduced, what we saw come out of the House Ways and Means Committee, there was the repeal of the $200 transfer tax, but the $200 maker tax was still present, right? And obviously, suppressors would still be considered restricted items under the NFA. That's all gone now under this current language of the budget reconciliation bill.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act, which I believe on the Manager's Amendment was lines 12 to 14 on page 39. It looks very simple because it is. It's a simple strike through of silencer in the NFA tax code section. After that, you do have the zeroing out of the tax for the making and the transfers of suppressors. Really, that's kind of the insurance policy in case the Senate parliamentarian decides that she doesn't think that Section 2 is Byrd rule compliant, which is a provision that is part of this reconciliation process to make sure that any measure that's included has a revenue nexus. And that's because the voting threshold in the Senate is down to a simple majority, so 50 votes instead of 60, because you can't filibuster over there. We are very confident that this is going to pass muster, that this is Byrd compliant, because again, the NFA in its entirety exists as a taxing scheme. It was upheld in 1937 in the Sinzinski case that made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And they ruled that this was justified as a taxing measure. So really, for all intents and purposes, we see it as a slam dunk, but we don't want to leave anything up to chance. We want to make sure that, we get the best win that we possibly can, regardless of the parliamentarian variable.
Yeah, and it is good to have that insurance measure. When I was talking with Representative Andrew Klein earlier this week, I mean, he did note that the registration is actually a registration on you paying the tax, right? It's
Yeah.
not necessarily a registration on you purchasing the suppressor. So the tax goes away. By nature, the registration requirement should go away, right?
Yeah, and that's the line of thinking, and we'll be working on next steps if it does land on just a zero out. But by far the simplest thing, the best thing that Congress can do is just strike it out, remove them from the National Firearms Act, and let it be done.
So would suppressors be treated as firearms then? I mean, I guess, the big question a lot of people have is, can I go and buy one over the counter? Am I still going to have to go through a background check? Like, how will this work if suppressors are removed from the NFA?
So, if Section 2 is included and it gets signed into law, then suppressors would be removed from the National Firearms Act. They would be subject to the Gun Control Act. So, they would be treated just like rifles and pistols, or excuse me, rifles and shotguns, like long guns. So, if you live in one of the 42 states where suppressors are currently legal, you go to your gun store, you fill out your 4473, assuming that you pass that, you're walking right out the door with your new suppressor. So, it really would be a fantastic day for Americans in those states. Unfortunately, it would not legalize them in the eight states where they are currently prohibited. That is something that we are working on separately through litigation to try and get the Supreme Court ultimately to rule that Second Amendment protections do apply to suppressors and therefore they cannot be banned, but that is a separate issue.
It is. And I, honestly, Knox, I mean, if this language gets signed into law, as you all know, we're going to see a major push on the part of the gun control groups to expand the number of states that prohibit suppressors, right?
Yeah, and to that I'd say we're ready. This is something that we've got a lot of experience in. We've defeated ban attempts in Virginia. We've defeated ban attempts in New Mexico. This is not something that's new to us. I'd be very willing to have that fight, especially if people are willing to have it based on the facts and the merits rather than the myths and the misconceptions that they peddle in.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, we do have to educate the public on this. While there are millions of Americans who own suppressors, and I think millions more who will own suppressors if they're deregulated out of the NFA, You know, there are also, I think, tens of millions of Americans who have bought into the lies of the gun control advocates that these things, you know, completely muffle the sound of a firearm. They make a rifle whisper quiet. You know, they bought into the sort of the Hollywood myths, as you say. So what do we need to be doing now to counter the lies and the misinformation from the anti-gun crowd?
I mean, getting the facts out there, right? That's really the only thing that we can do. We got to fight fire with fire. And the best thing to do is take people out to the range. Now, unfortunately, we can't take, you know, tens of millions of people out to show them what suppressors actually do.
Right.
But when it comes to lawmakers, when it comes to regulators and you know, political influencers, that's something that that, you know, we're going to continue to do. We've been doing it since 2011. And obviously, if this thing passes, then we're going to have to ramp that up at the state level. Anywhere that these things are under threat. But by and large, just, you know, getting the facts out there. Hey, guns are very loud. They're so loud that even with earplugs and earmuffs, they can still damage your hearing. Suppressors are a very effective tool to help mitigate preventable hearing loss, which is one of your five senses, right? Like, I don't think that people should be so cavalier with, you know, something that you cannot fix, you cannot replace. I really think just making sure that we're putting out good facts, to fight the anti-gunners, the folks that are coming after these, that's really kind of all that we can do.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm curious, I mean, if this becomes law, and fingers crossed that it does, you know, obviously, as you say, firearms are suppressed, will be treated as firearms. You can pass a background check, you can walk out with a suppressor. Do you think this will revolutionize gun making? Do you think we will start to see more firearms produced that have suppressors already integrated into the design of those firearms? I mean, obviously, we know it's possible, right? We've seen that before. Do you think that'll become more commonplace?
I think it's very likely that it will become more commonplace, especially you look at, you know, semi-automatic platforms. You can integrate a suppressor in there and have, you know, an overall barrel length of 16 inches without having to trigger the SBR, right? Whereas, you know, if you put a suppressor on even a Mark 18 from Daniel Defense, that's got a 10.3 inch barrel, you put a 6 inch can on there, all of a sudden that finger or footprint is, you know, over 16 inches. So if you build that into the barrel, then like that, I think will be something that a lot of manufacturers will start to do, which would be fantastic. Internally suppressed guns have been around for, you know, the better part of almost a century at this point. So it's not exactly new technology, but right. I do think that it would become more commonplace.
All right. And I've got to ask, too, because I know this is, you know, something that a lot of gun owners are talking about. It's great news that Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act was included in the budget. But, you know, there are a lot of folks who are also asking for inclusion of the Short Act, right? They wanted to see SBRs, SBSs removed from the NFA as well. Was that a topic of discussion among this coalition that signed this letter that came out yesterday, which referred specifically to Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act? Was there any discussion about that same coalition advocating for the inclusion of the language from the Short Act as well?
Yeah, so the gun groups that we've been working with for this whole process, we are all in lockstep that we would love to see nothing more than HPA and the Short Act become law. The question really becomes one of political strategy, not so much ideology. We are in line completely on that. It's really just, do we have the votes to get that in? And our assessment and the word that we got back from House leadership was, hey, we just don't have the votes for the Short Act. Certainly applaud, groups like GOA and Representative Clyde for pushing it. And I hope that they continue to do so. Again, we would love nothing more than to see the Short Act included in the final reconciliation package as well. Again, it just comes down to a question of what can we get done?
Yeah, that well, absolutely. And, you know, this was, I think that came into consideration even in the House Ways and Means Committee, right? Yep. I think that there was some horse trading that was done sort of behind the scenes to get that language included, to not go any further in order to have unanimity from the Republicans on the House Ways and Means Committee, with that sort of understanding that, okay, there's going to be that chance to revise this language via a manager's amendment going forward. And there is the opportunity. I mean, I'll admit, I think it's going to be an uphill fight, but I think there is the opportunity in the Senate now to expand on what the House has done and to maybe get the Short Act included. But that's going to depend a lot on gun owners contacting our representatives, right? It's the optics that I think a lot of these politicians are worried about. It's what's the press going to say? What are the anti-gunners going to say that the press is going to simply parrot and repeat, right? And so it's up to us to apply that pressure to our representatives and explain the facts to them And hopefully put enough pressure on, nominally pro-Second Amendment lawmakers that that they'll do the right thing and with including the SHORT Act as well.
You're absolutely right. We've got to keep the pressure up. Members on the Senate now need to know that this is an issue that gun owners and their constituents care about. Whether you're contacting them through us, through NRA, through GOA, doesn't matter as long as you're contacting them. And guys, do it polite. Coming in, screaming at these staffers. At the end of the day, most of the people that are picking up these phone calls are about 22-year-old interns, right?
Right.
Like they don't have really a key role in this policy, but they're taking a note of every time someone calls in and says, hey, we're in support or we're opposed to X, Y, or Z issue. So make those calls, be polite. It really goes a long way, and you'd be surprised at how much that can make or break an issue.
Absolutely. And while we're advocating for the SHORT Act, we also need to be talking with our senators about keeping the language intact, right? Because again, the gun control groups are going to be putting a lot of pressure on senators to amend this budget bill to remove the language that was included last night, right? I mean, that fight's not over as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I think that it's so neat watching this particular process, right? We've been working on this for 14 years. We formed back in 2011, and this was one of our initial stated goals, is trying to get suppressors removed from the National Firearms Act. But to see in this particular Congress, in this process, with new leadership at NRA, who are unwilling to back down, coming in and saying, hey, we're going to give you the praise that you deserve if and only if you earn it. And to hold the House's feet to the fire. There was no daylight between ASA, NRA, GOA on this issue. And I just think that that's a fantastic thing that we should all be celebrating, and we should all take a moment to pat ourselves on the back for. The guys over at NRA, John Comerford, Josh Savani, the new leadership, Doug over there, it's fantastic, and it's truly a breath of fresh air. I can't think of a single time where us and NRA and GOA have all worked this well in concert together to push the same common goal. And I think that that's something we should celebrate and keep up and get this thing through the Senate and to the president's desk.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just to piggyback on that for a second, I down in Atlanta at the NRA annual meeting, I was talking with Doug about this, and I said, it's great to see the NRA build these coalitions and partnerships in terms of litigation, which is something we hadn't actually seen a lot of in the past. And now you're seeing NRA work with groups like GOA, FPC on litigation, right? Not just the state level affiliates. It's great to see that happen on legislation as well, right? Because we are a stronger community when we are rowing together, and we can get more done when the infighting stops and when the coalition building starts. And so I think you're absolutely correct about that. I am heartened to see that this coalition came together. And again, I hope this is the a new chapter and a new day for Second Amendment activism on Capitol Hill, quite frankly.
Absolutely, I could not agree more.
All right, Knox, listen, man, I appreciate you taking a little bit of your time out of a very busy day, I am sure. And look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Well, Cam, thanks so much, man. It's truly a pleasure.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon. Knox Williams joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Knox for joining us on the program and looking forward to having him back again very soon. And again, I mean, I know we just talked about this, but it really is worth acknowledging the coalition building that is taking place, both in terms of legislation and in litigation. It is, I think it's truly great to see. I mean, as somebody who's been covering Second Amendment issues for more than 20 years now, to see these groups that have not always historically played well together, start to mend those fences and build those bridges, I think it only means good things. For not only the defense of our right to keep and bear arms, but strengthening and securing our Second Amendment rights going forward. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start with a story out of Nashville, Tennessee. And this is a little bit different than the typical recidivist report. Here's the headline: Vital Changes to Nashville Justice System After Spotlight on Critical Loopholes. Now, I confess, every time I hear the word loophole being used, I wonder, okay, what are we really talking about? In this case, it really does appear to be a loophole. Fox 17 in Nashville ran a series of stories about the failures in the local criminal justice system, one of which involves a lack of, not a lack of record keeping, but an inability to access criminal records from outside of Williamson County. So there was a woman named Dawn Bowman who got married to her husband last summer. About a month after they got married, Bauman says that her husband became abusive. She said, in my belief, I was knocked unconscious, and the injuries are consistent with him kicking me while I lay unconscious. She reported the assault to police. She filed for a protective order. Her husband was arrested, taken to the Davidson County Jail. But she then discovered that there was a lot more to his criminal history than just this most recent allegation. He had convictions, previous convictions for domestic assault, aggravated stalking, and violating a protection order in multiple jurisdictions around Tennessee. And I mentioned, by the way, I said this was a problem in Williamson County. Davidson County is where Nashville is located. But he was under felony probation out of Williamson County. And she told court officials and the jail that she had discovered this fact. They had no idea. She thought that this would violate the terms of his probation. And he could be charged with violating the terms of his probation, which would require him to stay behind bars, at least until this most recent domestic abuse case went to trial. But Bauman said, they kept saying, we don't know. She said they were unable or didn't see that he was on felony probation. And so within 2 days, her husband was released on a bond of $5,000, which is not that much, quite honestly. No GPS monitoring, nothing like that. She was forced to stay in hiding until that first court date. Her husband was eventually put back behind bars for violating probation, but Bauman had to bring a printout to court showing his criminal history just to be on the safe side. As Fox 17 notes, in the Davidson County court system, magistrates who are setting bond don't have access to a defendant's criminal history outside of the county that they're arrested in. So they can only look at the criminal history of a defendant in Davidson County. So if they have all kinds of criminal convictions, let's say in Shelby County, Memphis, Tennessee, or in the suburbs of Nashville, like Williamson County, that doesn't show up when the magistrate is considering bond. Diane Lance, who's the director of the Metro Office of Family Safety, says you could have someone who's committed a homicide in Georgia or in another county in Tennessee, and our commissioners, who are in charge of setting bond, have been unable to see that. Now, that is, you can call it a loophole or not, that's a problem, right? As Fox 17 says, after cases like Bauman's, a significant change is underway. Nashville Mayor Freddie O'Connell has proposed funding 6 more court administrators to run criminal background checks during bond hearings so that magistrates can view a suspect's entire history. According to Fox 17, the NCIC background database, which is run by the FBI, was not accessible by magistrates for what they say are several legal technicalities, but getting these additional court officers, they say, will rectify the issue. Fox 17 also says the protocol surrounding ankle monitors has also come under scrutiny since the death of a woman named Lauren Johansson. Suspect in that death, Bryson Rivers, skipped town after he was charged for beating Johansson during a trip to Nashville, despite the fact that he was required to wear an ankle monitor. Fox 17 says there were a series of missteps among the Davidson County Clerk's Office and bond companies that contributed to Rivers not complying with the GPS. And then a Davidson County judge lowered bond for Rivers, despite the family of Johansson expressing their concern in court. Robert Lance Johansson, Lauren's father, said we knew he was going to come for Lauren when he got the opportunity. Fox 17 says now bond compliance monitors are supposed to help keep tabs on defendants like Rivers. The Davidson County Sheriff's Office has set up a room in the jail specifically for inmates to be outfitted with GPS monitoring units, which they say will help streamline and secure the process with bonding companies. That's great. I got to tell you, I am not a fan of releasing somebody on GPS monitoring if they otherwise should have been held behind bars until trial. If this is a low-level offense, if they don't have a prior criminal history, you want to keep track of somebody, okay. But if the argument is, listen, we'd love to keep this person in jail because we believe that they're a danger to themselves or others. We think they are a threat to the community. We think they're a flight risk, but we don't have room in the jail. So instead, we're going to put an ankle monitor on them and hope for the best. That's not good enough to me. I mean, these ankle monitors can be cut off, as we've seen in so many jurisdictions. There is no active monitoring a lot of times. So the alarm gets cut. Maybe that company that's in charge of monitoring the GPS is notified. Maybe they're not. And if they are notified, maybe they contact law enforcement, maybe they don't. There are a lot of points of failure within a system like that. And again, I'm just not a fan of using these GPS monitoring devices in lieu of keeping somebody behind bars until trial, if that is appropriate and necessary. But I'm glad to see that some positive changes are underway there in Nashville, and hopefully that will lead to fewer instances of recidivism in the future. Now, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Houston, Texas, where a Hoodline reports a suspected intruder was fatally shot in a home invasion. Case now moving to the grand jury, and the accomplice has been charged. Of course, you know, every time there's a homicide, whether or not it is clearly justified or not, a grand jury typically is presented the information to decide if formal charges are warranted. In this case, this appears to be a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. According to Hoodline, a suspected intruder was fatally shot during an altercation at a home there in Houston on Wednesday. Actually, this might have been on Tuesday. Let me make sure. Yeah, this was on Tuesday. The deceased suspect, 23-year-old male, name still under verification by the Harris County Institute of Forensic Sciences, with another individual, apparently arrived at the residence, forced their way inside after causing property damage, which led to gunshots exchanged with one of the occupants of the home. The 28-year-old resident, who defended themselves, not injured. The second suspect, who unlawfully gained entry to the home, not injured as well. Hoodline reports, though, that the case took another turn when a witness indicated that the silver SUV containing the two suspects fled the scene. After the shooting occurred, it was prompted a search by law enforcement that ended with the apprehension of 19-year-old Zachary Michael Patterson after a pursuit. He's now been charged with burglary with intent to commit assault, evading arrest in a vehicle. Hoodline says his involvement with the incident at the residence is unclear at this moment, but hopefully we'll get more information there in the near future. All right, let's turn now to today's good deed of the day. Here's the headline: Arkansas family thanks man that rescued child swept away by waterfall. This is a scary situation from Fort Smith, Arkansas area. KFSM in Fort Smith reporting on this. There was a three-year-old from Fayetteville, Arkansas, who was at a park with her family. This was earlier in the week, May 20th. Kia Livingston says, we went there to hike, have fun. She says, we're going to go to the lakes, go swimming. She's like, I was like, let's go to the waterfalls. She said it was the family's third or fourth time visiting Tanyard Creek. And this time things did not go well. She said the water was higher than they had seen it before, probably because of some recent storms. She said, I was sitting on the rocks. She, meaning her daughter Melody, was standing on the bridge with her friends. They were throwing in rocks. We told her not to get too close. And then somehow she just stuck her foot in there and she was gone. Melody, 3 years old, ended up tumbling into the water near a waterfall, plunging about 15 feet down into the water. By the time Kia and her sister made it to the bottom of the waterfall, they said that a man had already retrieved her from the water. Kia said the man that saved her had already jumped in. So that she didn't end up having to get CPR. She was thankfully fully wedged between a rock that had held her underwater, held her in place, where he was able to scoop her up. And this three-year-old child not only didn't lose consciousness, continued breathing, didn't need CPR. She didn't even really have any like serious injuries, maybe some bruises from the rock, but that was it. Kia calls it a miracle from God. She says, I think yesterday was completely on God. When I couldn't get to the water, I had nobody to call on but God. And he was right there. Melody turns 4 on Sunday. While they said thank you at the scene, they've not had a chance to reconnect with the individual. Kia says, he saved my daughter's life, so anything we can do, if we can just say thank you, thank you. They are hoping to get the chance to do that, and I hope that they do get the opportunity. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I have so many people coming to my house right now. I got to go deal with folks who are outside. Amish, non-Amish, roofers, landscaper, I don't know. All right, I got to go. Anyway, we will see you back here on Monday. Be sure to check out buriedarms.com between... No, actually, we'll see you on Tuesday, because Monday's Memorial Day. So, we'll see you back here next Tuesday. We will be constantly updating buriedarms.com, though, today, tomorrow, throughout the weekend as well. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT, get 60% off your membership, and you'll be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, including conversations like today's with the Knox Williams of the American Suppressor Association. Have yourself a great Memorial Day. Don't forget why we are celebrating. It's not just a chance to go out and barbecue and have fun with friends. We are remembering those who gave their life in defense of this nation, and those individuals should be honored. All right, we'll see you back here Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.